Well met, and welcome to episode 98, the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for March 22nd, 2015. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. Greetings. This is Bill Walthall, and in this podcast, we continue our three-month-long discussion of Hamlet with the third and final segment of a three-part plot summary. When we last left Hamlet the play, we were at the end of Act 4, Scene 4, with our melancholy Dane watching the approach of the Norwegian army under Fortinbras, waiting to be taken to his death in England by Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, and declaring to make his own thoughts bloody. As we enter Act 4, Scene 5, we're back in the palace at Elsinore, with Queen Gertrude refusing to see someone. Oh, if it was only so easy as to be Claudius, but it isn't. It's the now indeed distract Ophelia, despondent over the death of her father. It's reported that she speaks much of her father, saying things in doubt that carry but half sense. In short, her speech is nothing. While Gertrude doesn't want to speak with her, Horatio sees value in meeting with Ophelia. 'Twere good she were spoken with, for she may strew dangerous conjectures in ill-breeding minds, sounding more like the politically shrewd Claudius than what we've heard from Horatio before. This prompts Gertrude to allow Ophelia access. When Ophelia enters, she sings a song of both true love and of a dead man's grave, seemingly linking Hamlet with her father. Claudius enters, and Ophelia shifts her song to a much bawdier one, finishing with nonsense mixed with ominousness. I hope all will be well. We must be patient, but I cannot choose but weep to think they would lay him in the cold ground. My brother shall know of it, and so I thank you for your good counsel. Come, my coach. Good night, ladies. Good night. Sweet ladies. Good night. Good night. Her brother shall know of it, she says, but he already does. After discussing what has driven her mad, her father slain, Hamlet gone, and the old man's burial rushed in a vain attempt to keep the populace from growing thick and unwholesome in their thoughts and whispers, practically sounds like previously on Hamlet, Claudius says that Laertes is in secret come from France. If it was secret before, it certainly isn't within the next 20 lines, as there are chaotic sounds from outside, and a messenger arrives to speak of Laertes leading the rabble to Elsinore. And if that wasn't bad enough news for Claudius, this same rabble cries, "Choose we, Laertes shall be king." And again, I gotta wonder at the rules of royal succession in Denmark. And with that, Laertes and the mob burst into the scene. Laertes orders the rabble out, and after a momentary denial, they leave like well-trained false Danish dogs. Gertrude's words, not mine or Laertes. Laertes calls Claudius vile king and demands his father. When Claudius confirms that Polonius is dead, Laertes wants to know how it came to pass, saying, "I'll be revenged most thoroughly for my father." Claudius tells Laertes that he is guiltless of Laertes' father's death, but before he can reveal the true culprit, Ophelia re-enters. Again, she sings of a dead man's passing. Without recognizing or even noticing her brother, she then hands out different flowers to those in attendance, naming each flower's significance as she hands them out. Then she departs, still without acknowledging her brother, who can only describe her as a document in madness. Claudius tells Laertes to gather his wisest friends and says that he will tell them all what happened. If, he says, they find that Claudius is responsible in any way, "We will our kingdom give, our crown, our life, and all that we call ours, to you in satisfaction." On the other hand, the king says, "And where the offense is, let the great axe fall." You can almost hear the wheels turning in Claudius' mind as they exit to end the scene. The short Act 4, Scene 6 finds a sailor delivering to Horatio a letter from Hamlet, recounting a pirate battle, kidnapped by pirates is good, especially for Hamlet, his arrival back in Denmark, and his need for Horatio to make sure another letter makes it to the king. Oh, and Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are still heading for England. Of them, Hamlet writes, "I have much to tell thee." Act 4, Scene 7 finds Claudius and Laertes together, discussing how not only did Hamlet kill Polonius, but how Hamlet also pursued the king's life. Laertes then demands why Claudius did not take action against the prince. The king responds with two reasons. He could not move against Hamlet without Gertrude's consent. Also, there's the great love the general gender bear him. The prince's popularity with the populace stopped Claudius. While Laertes announces, "But my revenge will come," the conversation is interrupted by the arrival of a messenger, via Horatio probably, with letters from Hamlet to the king and queen, announcing the prince's return to Denmark. Hamlet leaves a nice little dig at Claudius and his plans in his postscript, "Alone," signifying that the king's spies Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are no longer with Hamlet. Claudius says that he has devised a plan for the death of Hamlet, one that can be seen as an accident. Laertes states his desire to be the organ or cause of this death. The king tells Laertes of the news that has come to Denmark in his absence, outlining Laertes' skill in fencing. This news had envenomed Hamlet with envy, and the king plans to use this envy to bring the two men into a fencing match. Since Laertes is willing to cut Hamlet's throat in the church, he is more than willing to take part in a plan where the king schemes to make sure that Laertes' sword will not have a protective tip, thus allowing him to kill Hamlet. In fact, Laertes is willing to go one step further. With the drug he has purchased, he will touch his point with this contagion, that if I gall him slightly, it may be Hamlet's death. Claudius adds, yet another fail-safe. He knows that the fencing match will make both participants hot and dry, and he plans to poison Hamlet's drink. Their planning is interrupted by Gertrude's entrance and more horrible news. Ophelia is dead. She was attempting to hang a flowered garland on a tree's branch, but the branch broke. She fell into the water, and her garments, heavy with their drink, pulled the poor wretch from her melodious lay to muddy death. Laertes exits, and Claudius disingenuinely tells Gertrude, how much I had to do to calm his rage. Now fear I this will give it start again. Therefore, let's follow. And with that bit of duplicity, the fourth act of Hamlet comes to an end. When Act 5, Scene 1 begins, it's with two clowns, one a gravedigger, discussing the propriety of a Christian burial when the deceased willfully seeks her own salvation. It seems that because she was not common, a gentlewoman, certain allowances have been made. And when the non-grave digger exits, leaving the other to sing a song in the grave as he's digging, Hamlet and Horatio enter. A skull is thrown from the open grave, and Hamlet ponders the identity of the former owner of the skull, waxing poetic and ironic sarcastic. The prince calls the grave digger forth, and they engage in a playful banter on the ownership of graves and what it means to lie in one, both to lay one's body down and to tell falsehoods. When Hamlet asks the gravedigger how long he's been doing this line of work, the answer is important to the timeline of the play. I came to it that day our last King Hamlet overcame Fortinbras. It was that day that young Hamlet was born. I've been sexton here, man and boy, 30 years. So Hamlet is 30. The gravedigger hands Hamlet a skull that has been in the earth 23 years, and tells him that the skull belonged to a man, it turns out, Hamlet knew, the court jester Yorick. Cue one of the most famous and famously misquoted lines in all of Shakespeare. Alas, poor Yorick. I knew him, Horatio. It's not, alas, poor Yorick, I knew him well. Hamlet and Horatio retreat and watch as Ophelia's funeral party enters. When Laertes leaps into the grave to embrace his sister one last time and demands to be buried in the grave, Hamlet can take no more. He steps into the scene with a flourish. What is he whose grief bears such an emphasis, whose phrase of sorrow conjures the wandering stars and makes them stand like wonder-wounded hearers? This is I, Hamlet the Dane. Not only does he denigrate Laertes' emotional response, but he declares himself, at least to this gathering, King of Denmark, Hamlet the Dane. Laertes attacks Hamlet, who proclaims his love for Ophelia and even for Laertes. When cooler heads prevail and Hamlet exits, Claudius counsels Laertes, strengthen your patience in our last night's speech. We'll put the matter to the present push. And we are set for the final scene. The final scene begins with Hamlet and Horatio discussing what happened during Hamlet's enforced English trip. He had read the letter that Rosencrantz and Guildenstern were carrying to the English king from Claudius, which ordered that upon Hamlet's arrival, his head should be struck off. Hamlet substituted it with one of his own composition, which reversed the order with "those bearers put to sudden death," using his father's signet to seal the letter. On the following day, the sea fight with the pirates took place. Horatio is stunned to think that all of this was under the order of the king, but Hamlet is not surprised at all, given what else Claudius has done. "Killed my king and whored my mother, popped in between the election and my hopes, thrown out his angle for my proper life." As if on cue, a landed gentleman, Osric, arrives with the latest of Claudius's schemes, the wagered fencing bout between Hamlet and Laertes. There is quite a bit of bitingly comic wordplay between Hamlet and Osric. Hamlet accepts this challenge for immediate trial and tells Osric to relate the news to the king. While Osric goes to deliver the news, Horatio voices his concerns. He can delay the match if Hamlet suspects anything. Hamlet demurs, saying, "We defy augury. There is a special providence in the fall of a sparrow. If it be now, 'tis not to come. If it be not to come, it will be now. If it be not now, yet it will come. The readiness is all." Hamlet is ready for all of this to come to its conclusion. The fencing party arrives with the king, the queen, Laertes, and attendants. Hamlet apologizes to Laertes for all that has happened, blaming it on his madness, which is poor Hamlet's enemy as well. Laertes accepts the apology in nature, but in honor demands that their match continue. Hamlet agrees. The foils are selected, and the king sets up the respite wine, including the poisoned one for Hamlet. The match begins, and Hamlet wins the first 2 points. He passes on the wine glass. His mother instead drinks it, despite Claudius's warning her not to. The bout continues. In scuffling, they change rapiers, and they bleed on both sides, meaning both have been cut with the poisoned blade. The queen swoons, and she announces what she has realized. The drink, I am poisoned. Then Laertes reveals the truth about the poisoned blades and proclaims, the king's to blame. Hamlet wounds Claudius with the implicitly poisoned blade, then tells the king to drink off this potion. It's not stated explicitly that the king does finish the poison wine, but it is stated that the king dies. And before Laertes dies, he begs forgiveness of Hamlet. The prince then asks Horatio to report him and his cause aright to the unsatisfied. Though Horatio wants to take his own life, Hamlet stops him. There is the sound of Fortinbras and his army arriving back from Poland, giving the ambassadors of England a cannon volley of acknowledgement. Hamlet realizes that he will not survive long enough to hear the news from England, but gives Fortinbras his dying voice in the election to follow. Fortinbras and the English ambassador enter to the dismal scene. The ambassador delivers the news that Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. And while Horatio says that he can later explain how these things came about, Fortinbras announces he will embrace his fortune in this kingdom, his first act being to set up a soldier's right for the dead prince. And thus ends the play, with a sight as this which becomes the field, but here shows much amiss. Now, if you've enjoyed this podcast, but you haven't been following along with our daily blog entries this last week, you've missed out on subjects including Act 4, Scenes 5 through 7, This Week in Shakespeare, Act 5, Save the Date, details on an upcoming presentation, Happy Birthday to my lovely wife of nearly 24 years, and To Be Mad or Not to Be Mad, that's the question. So, if you'd like more in-depth discussions or just want a daily fix, check out the blog entries at thebillshakespeareproject.com or become a fan of our Facebook page and our Twitter feed. Remember that those social media outlets are more for Shakespeare news and notes than discussions of our current play under study. Also, if you have any question about this or any other Bill Shakespeare Project podcast or blog entry, you can always lob me an email at bill@thebillshakespeareproject.com. And join us again in a couple of weeks for a deeper dive into Hamlet. We hope to see you then. You've been listening to the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for March the 22nd, 2015. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com, and we shall see thee anon.